I'm a foodie and I enjoy learning about the process that brings great foods and beverages from idea to the table. And then I like tasting them and learning the nuances of what creates the most significant tastes, from coffee to cheese to distilled beverages. I did a tequila tasting in Mexico and recently bourbon, Heaven Hill Bottled in Bond Bourbon. It really impressed me from the story to the taste. I grew up in Kentucky where horse racing and bourbon are famous, and I got introduced to Heaven Hill Bottled in Bond Bourbon. It's produced by Heaven Hill Distillery, which has been and still remains family-owned since 1935, and I'm impressed with the bourbon's ultra-rich, smooth taste, and right on the bottle, it states that this bourbon is 7 years old, which is actually three times longer than what's required to be certified as bottled in bond. I feel with beverages, the longer the prep, the better the taste. Being a bottled in bond product means it must pass a list of seven requirements that set the standard for this quality bourbon. So look for it at your local store. Heaven Hill reminds you to think wisely and drink wisely.
Yeah.
You are driven. You've got all the drive you need within you, but is it in alignment with your true values and your core desires? So we're on a journey together to unearth what really drives you and me too, what matters most, so we can drive further, faster, and enjoy the ride. When you know what drives you, what you want becomes inevitable. This is What Drives You, and I'm your host, Kevin Meller. What Drives You is brought to you by Ziglar. If you're a coach or interested in coaching, go to Ziglar.com. Let the wisdom and sales skills of Zig Ziglar equip you to be an influential and successful coach. And I invite you to engage with me and other driven people. Go to my website or social media. It's kevinmiller.co. And if you want to connect with us, we've got a community, the Drive Tribe. You can see that at the website, and where we talk further on these topics and about our drive overall. And if you get value here, it would be a gift if you would leave a review for the podcast. All right, here are seven key highlights that I got from this series on transforming conflict. Well, this is my big idea and action episode where I pull out the key highlights from our series on transforming conflict. Our catalyst was William Urey, one of the world's best known experts on negotiation. He's the co-author of Getting to Yes. It's the world's all-time best-selling book on the topic, more than 15 million copies sold. He's co-founder of Harvard's program on negotiation, and his brand new book in our muse for this part one, or for this whole series, is Possible. That's the book name, Possible: How We Survive and Thrive in an Age of Conflict. I also had a conversation in the previous episode with my co-host and brother, Jared Angaza. He's served domestically and overseas as a conflict negotiator himself. And it was in that conversation that I really had an epiphany, which I'm about to share, and what turned out to be seven key highlights that stood out to me. All right, number one, a big point of this. So we're looking at conflict, is you do not have to agree. You don't have to agree. If you heard episodes or the last episode, part three, with my brother, that came out. And man, that is not the way that I looked at conflict, specifically relationally. You know, you find friends where you agree. You find a spouse where you agree. That's what my perspective was. And I think it is a very common perspective culturally, that we don't have to agree. What we've got to do is just figure out how to honor each other's differing opinion, perspective, belief, faith, whatever it may be, but we don't have to agree. We can agree to disagree. Even that sounds goofy. You've probably heard it before, but for real, could you come to a conflict with someone, with someone's, and say, hey, we can agree to disagree, but let's at least understand each other and honor each other. Terry Real, I mentioned him before. Here's the quote that I paraphrased. He said, there is no room for objective reality in personal relationships. Who's right or wrong doesn't matter. It's about two subjective realities that have to negotiate with each other and make things work for themselves as a team. And William Urey said, the problem is not conflict, but the destructive way we deal with it. We do it poorly. I've done it poorly. I still am struggling. That's why we're doing this series. I'm going to be learning for a long time, I think, on this one. But if you think about the relationship, most of us, when we have conflict, it is within a relationship that we want to maintain. Whether it's with a spouse, with a child, family, friends, whether it's at work with coworkers, managers, employers, employees, different business relationships, vendors that you have, different partners that you may have, and you're wanting to maintain the relationship or at least some level of civility. Very few of us are looking to just blow it out of the water, and we'll get to that. So you don't have to agree. It's a big point. You don't have to agree in conflict. You just have to figure out how to honor each other. Number two, this was a big point of Bob's, of Bill's, that you got to pause. You've got to pause. We are so reactionary as a culture, and we get in that habit just in relationships. Somebody says that, you say this. Somebody says that, and you are arguing, you are debating, you are in conflict. It's now emotional. And he's just putting so much weight on you have to pause. And he calls it going to the balcony. Go to the balcony and take a moment. Don't react. Zig Ziglar was big on responding, healthfully responding with thought and awareness, not boom, reacting. Man, that's hard. When you get triggered, we're not going to go down the psychological aspect of this, but when you get triggered, which means you are threatened, you are frightened, whatever. And I look at that and I go, I don't want anything to be able to trigger me. I want to always be able to pause. You hear me say, I want. That is not, I have not arrived there. I'm better. And I'm better in some relationships than others, some instances than others. But to pause. I mean, if that was just number one, I wish that we could have a red flag that came up, you know, or a little buzzer on me that showed where my emotions were, or my heart rate that starts going beep, 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 Kevin. And it's like, whoa, okay, wait, deep breath, stop. We don't do that relationally. It even seems goofy. Like, I'm not going to do that. Can I just be real? Well, yeah, you can be real and you can have bad conflict. Destructive conflict, as he says. That's why he wrote a book for it. That's why he's, goes around the world helping people with this. We do not naturally do this well. It is a very learned thing to do it well. And you've got to pause. Number three.
When we fast, we stop eating food and allow our body to repair. The research on the benefits and the reset is profound. The problem is we like food. We're addicted to food. Me too. Missing a meal or a day of eating is terrifying to a lot of people. So here is ProLawn. It's a revolutionary plant-based nutrition program that nourishes the body while making the cells believe they're fasting. ProLawn is not a diet. It's science based on Nobel Prize-winning discoveries in medicine. ProLawn provides a 5-day program where you get snacks and soups and beverages all designed to keep your body in a fasting state, while taking away the difficulty and mindset of deprivation. I've fasted for 5 days with nothing but water, and my physical and mental state was incredible. My struggle was just wanting to fulfill my habit of eating. It was significant. ProLawn took that away. It's amazing. I feel like I'm cheating, but getting the benefits of fasting. So right now, ProLawn is offering What Drives You listeners 10% off their 5-day nutrition program. So go to ProLawnLife.com/Kevin. That's ProLawnLife.com/Kevin for the special offer. Thankfully, the days of building a business website, then having this massive endeavor to integrate an online store are gone. Today, Shopify has fixed all that. I had one business where we actually built the entire website on Shopify's platform. So whether you're just starting out or you're selling $1 million of product already, Shopify is just the industry leader. It works the same for physical products or online and digital, and Shopify is just hands down the best out there. Most importantly, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. It's 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Getting people to buy is not that hard, at least to the buying point, but getting them to actually give their payment info is, and Shopify is king in that department. They also have top-tier customer service, which I think is critical. You can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/Kevin. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/Kevin to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/Kevin.
Friends, I'm pretty candid about my lack of financial prowess. Money and numbers are fairly Greek to me, so I need a lot of guidance. One of my closest friends is a wildly successful wealth manager, and I'm working on some financial literacy and just continually seeking guidance. So I ask you to check out yahoofinance.com. Nobody knows it all, and Yahoo Finance is an incredible resource for the rookies like me or the seasoned investors. You know, before my dad passed away recently, Dave Ramsey and his wife Sharon flew down to visit. We all got to spend a day together, and I was at yahoofinance.com just now. I saw multiple news flashes from Dave and other people that you respect, and they're hitting so many of the hottest areas in finance today. So it's a place to get a snapshot of all aspects of your financial interests, and if you have them, your portfolios. I hadn't realized Yahoo Finance is the number one finance destination, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. So for your comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. One more time. yahoofinance.com.
Number three, it is a big deal. I almost feel like to some degree, treating any conflict like this is a big deal, not to blow it out of proportion. And in some ways, you know, you could play with the semantics of this, but bear with me, because I'd also say it'd be helpful to also say it's not a big deal. Oh my gosh, can we just not get our panties in a wad, as they say? It's not a big deal. But relationally, it's a big deal. And if I would treat it as such, not with my own emotions, but just giving it gravity of going, okay, it seems like a little thing, but what's at risk here is the relationship, right? So let's call it a big deal. And treat it as such with rules and guidelines. Back to Terry Real. I mean, any marriage therapist is going to have rules, guidelines, structure, strategy, call it what you want. Take whichever one works for you. Yeah, I have a strategy for conflict. I have structure. I have rules. I have guidelines, whatever works for you. But I thought about that. I mean, anything that we do well, we prepare for. I don't just jump on my bike and go out. I put on certain gear, make sure I have things with me. Football. We just had the Super Bowl, and there's no sport that doesn't have rules and guidelines. You can't do that. You can't grab the other guy's jersey and hold him. You'll get a penalty. You're allowed to play the game, but to play it fairly, there's rules and guidelines. It makes so much sense, but we don't do it. I struggle so much because you're just right in the conflict in the moment. If I would, number two, pause, and then number three, say, man, this is a big enough deal. If I do care enough about the relationship, that there's rules and there's guidelines. It's interesting. I'd read a book, and I think it was the guy who wrote Born to Run. I'm sorry, and it was like Natural Born Heroes. I think is what it is. I can't recall the writer's name, but in there he talked. One of the subjects in his book was a guy, or I think it was a couple guys who trained. People to fight, like in wartime, like to fight to win, period. And it was like the kick to the side of the leg that destroys your knee. It was the thumb in the eye. And they said, and I'm paraphrasing, but they said, you know, if it's a real fight, like a street fight where you're out for blood, it's over fast. It's over fast because one person maims the other and they're out. That's it. They said MMA or boxing, but even more so MMA has rules. Otherwise you would destroy each other and the fight wouldn't last and the fighter couldn't continue, which is why you don't see them kicking each other sideways in the knee and destroying a knee or breaking each other's bones or something like that, which you can do, or gouging an eye. They make rules to make it, well, in all truth, to make it go longer, but also to make it fair so that they can come back to fight another time. That's what we're talking about here. Is having some structure and going, okay, we're not going to blame. We're not going to label each other. We're not going to call names. We're not going to raise our voices. You know, you can go down that line of, okay, here we are. We're at conflict. We paused. Now we're here. Let's prepare with some guidelines. William Ury said this, how to tell if negotiations are going poorly or well. They're going poorly. Blame is happening. We're mired in the past. And we're focusing on just what's wrong, on the problem, what's wrong. If it's going well, we're not talking about the past. We're talking about the present and the future. And instead of focusing on what's wrong, we focus on what could be done. What can we do? Instead of attacking each other, we attack the problem jointly. I'll speak more to that in just a second. But we attack the problem jointly. He also said the way in which those in conflict talk with one another could either close down or open up new possibilities for agreement. And you know that the people that you struggle with, you know right away how they're feeling, what their attitude is, what their demeanor is, what their mood is, and if they're there to hurt, you know? So the way that we talk back again to the guidelines, the structure, some strategy. Number four, know what you want. This is what you can do on the balcony or when you come into the conflict is know what you want and why. Really, why? Why is it important to you? Why is it such a big deal enough to have conflict? Because if it's not a big deal, really, you might just go, oh, whatever, do what you want. Obviously, it's a big deal. You would not be in conflict with each other. So what do you want and why? Man, that's another one that we don't often do. And this is why you do take that pause and say, man, I may need a minute. If you're right in it with somebody, say, you know what, can I just have a minute? Make up an excuse, go to the bathroom and think about what is it that you really want? What is at the core of this issue for you? All right, number five then is establishing the goal. And this was interesting as this came up during the conversations of what is the goal? Are you there? It's conflict. And are you there literally just to win, period? And we talked about that. So if you're on a sports team, you're there just to win. You're not there to compromise or necessarily connect with anybody. You're there to win. So in the conflict that you're in, is that it? Are you going to get lawyers? Are you going to get swords? Are you going to get whatever? But you're there to win. It's relevant to establish that I am here to win and be honest with yourself. Question yourself. But if you say, you know, at the end of the day, man, that's it. I'm here to win. Okay, that changes the rest of my points that I'll get to here. But that changes the whole thing. It really changes everything, obviously. Are you here to win? Now, the other side that we talked about was, or are you there to connect? You know, especially in a relationship with somebody you care about, to connect, or even a business relationship where you want to maintain connection. Now, I'll come back to that because another one that came out during this series was there is an aspect of compromise. Like you may say there, okay, I'm not here just to win and blow the other person out of the water, but I'm not necessarily looking to connect. You know, it's a business deal or whatever, but I'm looking to be civil and find some kind of a compromise. So again, I'm not necessarily connecting necessarily. This isn't a relationship I want to keep long term, but even that's good. So, hey, I'm here to compromise. This isn't going to be some deep connection or whatnot, but I do want to compromise. So when blow them out of the water, compromise, let's just find something amiable that we can go forward with or connect. Or is it actually, I do want to connect. So establish the goal for yourself. And you can do that with the other person too. I mean, with anything. I mean, what would be great is to be doing this, going through this kind of stuff with somebody you're in conflict with, and both of you having these parameters around. Number six, depending on the goal, then you can arrange yourself accordingly. And this came up in part three. It was really interesting as we talked about the sitting across the table. That's the kind of thing we talked about, right? Conflict. One person's on here, one person's here, and we're trying to, you know, work this thing out, but we're against each other. We're on opposing sides. That's what we culturally tend to have the perspective of. If you're not in agreement, then you are on opposing sides. From a lawyer standpoint, it is opposing counsel, right? But with opposing sides, again, sitting across the table, the other idea is the triangle table. Man, I really like that. It's so interesting as we talk about the round table, like Knights of the Round Table. That was, you know, Lancelot or King Arthur, and there was no head. It's pretty cool. And it's that concept. But for some reason, as we're often in conflict with another person specifically, or even if it's a group, but to think, okay, if we're here to compromise or to connect, how about a triangle table? You, me, and then there's another side. And that's what we're trying to come to terms with is that third way. That's where it came up with talking to my brother, Jared, about the third way. And I like that concept with it. It's almost like, okay, we're in a conflict. Let's, you know, sit at the triangle table take a triangle out. I may do that. I may play with that. Take a triangle out and go, okay, you know, this is theoretically, here it is. Here's a piece of paper. One side is you, one side is me, and then we are looking for the third way. I love the concept of that as a visual. It feels powerful. I like word pictures. I like the concepts to be visualized in my head. And I really like that idea of setting it out. And it makes me think of Bob Bodine. He wrote the book called Two Chairs. And it's from a spiritual standpoint about you taking a seat and then having this visual of next to you or across from you of God. And that you are there and you're not just praying and asking for stuff. You're there to listen. And his premise is God, do you believe God cares about you? And you know, if you do, you say yes. Do you believe that God's powerful enough to deal with your problems? If you say yes, okay, now listen. Listen. The book's sold a ton of copies, incredibly popular book. But again, it's that visual. So that's what I'm playing with here with the triangle table, is that we have a commemorative spot here for what we're really trying to do. We are not in, but we're not opposing each other. We're working this out. Again, unless you're there to win, then you just have a regular table, sit across from each other and duke it out, whatever you're going to do. Jump over the table and beat the other person up if that's your point. But generally, I don't think that is in our lives. So arranging yourself accordingly. Are you across the table or are you as opposing sides, or are you on a triangle trying to figure out a third way? Are you across the table or are you as opposing sides, or are you on a triangle trying to figure out a third way? And then last, number seven, is the why, is communicating your why. Have you done that? As opposed to saying, hey, I want this, you want that, how can we find a compromise? Why do you want that? Can you do that with yourself and get to the why and then communicate it with the other person? I talked about that a minute ago, your why, but have you communicated it? Say, man, I want this because this is what it means to me. This is what's really in it. This is the emotion behind it. Can you get to that? And then can you work to get the other person too? And they may not. But to the best of your abilities, this is where you get into some of the therapy language of hearing somebody and say, okay, so I understand that you want X and this is why. And they go, well, no, that's not why. Oh, gosh. Okay, why then? And you can lead them into that. I say that it's very difficult to do. It's very difficult to do when you yourself are triggered already and you're struggling with it. It's maybe difficult to try to do that with somebody. You may get criticism from them or pushback. I don't know that any of this is easy. But that aspect of, I've heard the concept of, can you understand the other person? Can you stand on the other side of the mountain? Can you see from the other side of the mountain? Can you put yourself in there? Or I had a therapist one time talk about a beach ball because each side is different colors and we're always looking at a different color. Can you try to see it from their standpoint? I like the idea of, if you had to make a case for the other person, you can do this by yourself with a journal or just thinking through it and go, okay, if I put myself in their shoes, can I have some understanding for how they're seeing it? You may think it's a dumb understanding. You go, okay, if they're looking at it with this way in this heart, can they see? Okay, that's relative to some degree, and have some understanding and compassion for that. Or again, to ask them what it is at the end of all this conflict. What is it that they are wanting, and why? Do we really understand them? Because so often, back to William Urey's standpoint of how destructive we are, because we are arguing, well, and to Terry Real, we're arguing about the objective reality. We are trying to convince. We are trying to make a case. How often have you had that work? How often have you entered into conflict and somebody else just went and made a case and tried to convince you, and you realize all of a sudden and said, oh my gosh, now I get what you're saying. I totally agree with you. How many times that happened? Maybe it has. But I would imagine if you're interested in conflict to the degree that you're listening to this right now, you're probably having a lot of times where that does not seem like the case. And you are not, understanding each other. You're not seeing eye to eye. And you are convincing and making a case. I do this. I end up in my journal venting. Right, making my case. Sometimes I can do that and kind of get it off. That's some of my balcony work and kind of get it off my chest. Go, okay, that was the raw feelings. And now, okay, but what do I do? How can I come around? Now let me think about it through the other person's lens, strive to at least. But those are red flags to me when we are convincing and we're making a case. And of course, you can explain why it is that you see something a certain way and share it as this is how I saw it, and this is how it makes me feel, and this is how I want to feel. This is what I want as an outcome, as opposed to saying, this is the way I see it, and convincing. What we do is convince the other person to see it that way. Yeah, but come on, but if this is what happened and this is how I saw it, can't you see that? And that's the spirit that we generally take. And this is what William Ury is, you know, whether he's working with people, individuals, couples, or whether he's working with two warring countries. And it's the same scenario. He's got one and they are dead set on their perspective. They're dead set on their perspective, but they're here at the table because they got to do something. They got to compromise, at least for the most part. If they were just about winning, then they're just going to pull out guns. They don't need him. So they're there at the table by proxy because they're looking for help. And he's got to get them seeing the other person's side to some degree, to some level, or at least to come to a compromise, at least to get past. Probably no side is going to get exactly what they want, but can we come to a compromise that at least ends this so we can go forward? Again, don't have to agree, but you got to be able to agree to disagree, but find something equitable for both sides. It's a big topic. It's a big topic, folks, and one that's going to take, this is one of those that you don't just hear and things change. This is one you have to work out. For me, on the simplistic side, I'm literally thinking about pulling out, having a triangle around somewhere that reminds me and using it. Even if I'm just by myself using it and just looking at it going, okay, this is not opposing sides. I've got to help come up with a third way. That may be my personal red flag or reminder, is the triangle. You'll have to find your own. Well, friends, thank you so much for joining me on this journey. I would love to talk with you further in our Drive Top Tribe. Go to kevinmiller.co and click on community. Big thanks to William Ury. And this book is significant. It's called, again, Possible: How We Survive and Thrive in an Age of Conflict. Also, thanks to my brother, Jared Angaza, for joining me to discuss this further. Gosh, and I don't want to forget, too, that William joined me to do part three with on Thomas Hubel. That was such a joy. And we're already looking at doing a kind of a round table of sorts in a new series, new episode format we're going to do with William. So hopefully we'll have him back here again. Well, hey, friends, until next time, I hope this episode has been beneficial to you and helps you drive further, and enjoy your ride.
Yeah.